Cotswold arrived the next day, dressed in a straw-yellow linen suit. Valentine thought he had a ponderous elegance to him.
Asthma. Speaking of miseries, how's your body got?
A little better.
Duvalier had visibly thinned as the fever wrung the water from her. Valentine, feeling almost as daring as the night he snuck into the General's Nebraska headquarters, had stolen a plastic bag full of ice from the fish vendor when her back was turned and used it to make a compress for her head. She now slept, perhaps a little more soundly thanks to ice and aspirin, in the flea-infested cabin. He left her a note. Not knowing what the night might bring, he didn't lock her in the cabin. The only weapon he dared take was his little multi-knife. Cotswold puffed up past the stone pharaoh and into the cool of the pyramid. The sun still seemed high, but the evening throngs were already milling around on the inside. Rivermen in an assortment of outfits and assorted KZ thrill seekers traveled in mutually exclusive clusters. Women dressed so as to present décolletage, stomach, buttocks, and legs to advantage, wandered through the crowd selling shots of licorice-smelling alcohol called Mississippi Mud or party bead necklaces of candy, aphrodisiacs, and Alka-Seltzers on a single convenient string, or hot pink Moyo roses that could be presented to any working girl in tonight's theme costume. Valentine overheard that it was a cheerleader outfit for a free tumble. They walked the concourse toward the elevators. They shouldered past a group of off-duty soldiers extracting money from their socks and hats and stepped into the line at the elevator. A red-jacketed security man walked up to their place in the line. He had a bald head and the smooth but unenergetic manner of a head waiter.
Destination?
Moyo's office.
You have an appointment, Mr. Cotswold?
Yes, we do. I made it through Anias.
The security man flipped through a three-ring binder. Two guards looked them up and down.
Cotswold and Jacksonville, VIP visitor. Very good, sir. If I could just have you take off your coat, Mr. Cotswold.
Of course.
Cotswold removed his coat and turned in a circle.
Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Jacksonville. Step out of line and extend your arms, please.
Valentine submitted to a pat-down from one of the guards. They extracted the folding knife.
I'm sorry, sir. No blades whatsoever.
The supervisor placed it in a gridwork of cubbyholes like a mail sorter and gave Valentine a numbered chit, and each of them got red plastic badges on lanyards.
Please wear these around your necks at all times, especially when upstairs. Gordon will take you up.
They rode in silence.
Watch your step when the door's open.
Valentine made a move to tip him, but Cotswold shook his head. They exited the elevator, went down a short hallway lined with paintings of irises, and turned, then passed into a wood-paneled foyer. A red-blazered security man holding another binder waited on a chair. A man with the most neatly trimmed hair and nails Valentine had ever seen smiled from his wooden desk at a nexus of hallways. Asian eyes that reminded Valentine of a picture of his grandmother crinkled in a friendly fashion.
Mr. Cotswold, how are you tonight?
Keeping busy.
And this is...
Stu Jacksonville, leisure and entertainment from the Gulf. This is Rooster. Stu's looking to upgrade his inventory.
Excellent. Just excellent. You're wondering about the name. It's from my days looking for a new talent in the rail yards. My hair used to stick up on top.
Gotcha.
Christ on a popsicle stick, you fuck up! Rooster! I got another ass that needs kicking in here!
Mr. Moyo's having trouble with the lines up from Texas. Please, excuse me. Won't you have a seat?
Ah, quit crying, you twat! Stop the excuses!
Rooster picked up a leather folio and passed through the double leather doors.
I hate when he gets worked up. You want to go next?
You've got bad news too, I take it.
Desertions. Not of our people, the Memphis clowns. City Guard Commander says we got to start using our forces for exterior security as well as internal until they get back up to strength. That means busting heads down in the commons, and no one much likes that.
Maybe we should go first. Mr. Jacksonville is looking to spend a great deal of money.
And then please, be my guest.
One of the double doors opened again. A sullen-looking woman came out, holding the shoulder strap of her briefcase with both hands as though it were a lifeline in a hurricane. Rooster had his arm gently touching her elbow.
Of course it's not your fault, Yayala. It's going to take a while for the reversals in Texas to be overcome.
He guided her down the hall toward the elevators, and Valentine followed the thread of the conversation by hardening his hearing.
We'll redirect traffic through New Orleans, and Coastal Craft can get it to Houston. The deposits will arrive a little seasick, but they'll be safer.
Rooster glided back into the foyer.
We're next.
Moyo's office filled the entire east side of the pyramid. Sloping glass looked out over Memphis' few remaining high-rise buildings and the gold-lit blocks of the former children's hospital in the distance. Except for the striking slope to the glass, the office didn't look like a pimp's digs, full of exotic animal furs and silver barware, or a rail baron's throne room of oak and brass. Valentine was expecting some combination of the two. Instead, Moyo's office seemed to be modeled on a small town sheriff's. There was a battered wooden desk with a compact easel-like computer on it, and a not-quite-matching credenza against a dividing wall next to the desk. A few tube steel chairs were placed around the room, one opposite the desk and more against the walls. On the other side of the divider was a kitchenette where brewed coffee sat on a hot plate, a locked gun case, and dozens of aluminum file cabinets. The most esoteric features were fancy drop lighting fixtures, throwing puddles of gold on the red carpeting and lending a warm tone to the room. The only personal touch was a curio cabinet filled with toy trains. Two professionally dressed women played cards on a newsprint-covered table at the corner window. One had a diplomat bag with a laptop poking out of it. The other kept an old-fashioned steno pad at her elbow. Opposite the women, a corridor, complete with a steel-barred door, better than anything Val had seen at the Nut, led to a darkened hallway that looked as though it went to the center of the pyramid. Moyo flicked off the computer screen as they entered. Valentine thought Moyo had the junkyard dog features of a man who bit down and kissed up on the downslope of 40.
Mr. Cotswold has a new associate, a buyer up from Florida. This is Stu Jacksonville.
Jacksonville? Gene Moyo. Pleased.
Moyo didn't look pleased, but he came around the edge to shake hands. His hand felt like a wrench wrapped in desert leather.
Christ, Rue, at this rate, I'm never getting down to the games. It's supposed to be a good match tonight.
We won't be long. Just need a few permissions to look over your current inventory.
Rue, go down to the box and tell them to hold dinner. Well, sit down, you two. Make it fast.
They pulled chairs as Rooster left. Valentine wanted to look around the office, but didn't see how he could in his present circumstances. He surreptitiously felt around in his pocket. Valentine shifted in his seat to cover his hand's motion.
What's your line, Jacksonville? Pro or amateur?
Well, my official title's Provisional Leisure and Entertainment Director. The port's growing.
Learn something useful, son. No one with a title like that rises.
It's a sinecure. I used to work Coast Security.
Get the facial reconstruction doing that?
That would make a better story. It was an accident. I was careless with a rifle.
What kind of numbers are you looking for?
30 girls to start off. I'd like a seat at your auctions, too. I can see two, maybe three trips a year up here.
Payment?
Gold. I have enough for a substantial deposit.
Let's see your color. Sorry, but you're a stranger to me.
Valentine placed a coin on the desk.
Fort Knox Mint. Very good.
Mr. Moyo, if you'd rather talk business at the game, I'm not averse to continuing negotiations down there.
Anais!
The woman with the diplomat bag set down her cards.
Yes, Mr. Moyo.
Get my weekly out. See if Rooster's got any last-minute additions. Then you two can go home as soon as I'm done with my last appointment.
Thank you, Mr. Moyo.
Rooster! Take these gentlemen down to the owner's box. We have much inventory on hand?
No. 5 or 6 girls at the most. Sorry, Mr. Jacksonville. A year ago, we had half of Arkansas in here. At this rate, there won't be another auction for some weeks.
You can buy out of my joints if you want, Jacksonville. I got a couple of older gals who aren't half bad managers, too. If the price is right, you could hire one or two away from me.
I appreciate your generosity.
Liquor in the box is on me, all right? Cut, you staying?
I need to see about my weekend shifts and monthlies.
More rice for us, then.
Moyo came around the desk to shake hands again.
Rooster, take Stu down to the box and get him set up. Unless you want a quick look at the inventory.
No, I'll check out your games. And your bar.
Be down in an hour or so. I gotta go up and do my own reporting.
You actually go up?
Just to an audience, Blister. You ever been in one?
No.
My predecessor used to rub lemon zest inside his nostrils to keep out the smell. But, it's the walls that get to me. That paste they use, it sucks water out of the outside air somehow. Everything on the inside's wet and dripping. When a big drop hits your shoulder, well, you jump. Feels like someone tapping you.
See you later for a drink, then.
Sure. Whoa there, Stu. You missing something?
What's that?
Looks like you dropped your roll. It's right under the desk there.
Must have fallen out when I reached for my coin. That would have been a pisser. That's my walking around money.
Valentine retrieved the bills he'd nudged under the desk moments ago.
I'll forgo the 10% finder's fee. Rooster, give me the latest transport figures with destinations. Then send in that ass pecking snow on your way out, would you?
Valentine slipped the brass ring to Cotswold on the way out as Rooster collected his carry-all from his desk. Valentine wondered how long it would take him to have it checked out. While a brass ring meant little to a Kurian or one of their reapers if it wasn't on the actual owner's finger, it was still a powerful totem when waved in front of the groundlings. Valentine just had to hope the circumstances of the ring's loss were not so well known as to have everyone connected to it, including Stu Jacksonville, immediately rounded up for the reapers. Valentine watched Cotswold touch the ring in his pocket, fingering it like an exploring teenager.
If you're into music, maybe you can show me around Beale Street tomorrow.
Sure.
You'll find that little thank you. What did Mr. Moyo say? Finder's fee? Useful, if you ever get down my way.
I'll have to do that before long.
Valentine felt sorry for the dreamy look in the man's eyes. Did confidence men ever feel guilty as they took their marks? Valentine and Rooster exited on the showcase level. Cotswold continued down in the elevator. Fresh paint covered the structural concrete here, and the lighting came from bulbs.
Rooster, can I ask you a question?
Shoot, Stu.
You don't mind if it's Stu, do you?
Not at all.
Why the kindling up in Mr. Moyo's office? My head porter has a nicer rig.
Affectation. He started out as a diesel mechanic. When they made him yard supervisor, he got an office. It had that junk in it. To him, that first desk meant that he made it. I don't mind. He gave me the previous director's outfit for my office. Solid mahogany and half a herd of leather.
You intend to be the next director?
Oh, almost there already. I run the day-to-day stuff. He gets the headaches. Personally, I like having him between me and them.
Valentine wanted to ask more about the day-to-day stuff, but they reached the box. About a dozen people, not counting a food server and an impossibly beautiful young man tending bar, already lounged in the box. The wedge-shaped room was divided into a set of plush-looking seats arranged stadium-style and an entertainment area. A hot tub filled with ice prickled with the necks of beer bottles and sparkling wines. Harder liquors filled up a backlit case behind the bar. A pair of televisions at each corner held scheduling information.
Closed-circuit TV. Most of the skyboxes are wired. We've got a camera snafu, so there won't be any close-ups tonight. Getting replacement electronics takes practically forever.
Valentine looked over the attendees. One of the men had the look of an athlete, as big as one of the Razor's bears, but his velvet skin had a far healthier sheen and only a neatly closed scar or two. Men and women in well-cut summer cottons were listening to the sportsman. Two obvious party girls eyed him hungrily from the bar. Rooster introduced Valentine as a hotel owner from Florida. The box looked out over the three-ring circus at the center of the arena through tinted glass windows. Valentine looked out on Moyo's entertainments. The layout was familiar to anyone who had seen a circus. A hard wooden track, black with wheel marks, surrounded three platforms. The two on either end were more or less stages. One had a band on it at the moment, furiously working their guitars and drums, and the one in the center was an oversized boxing ring shaped like a hexagon. Two decks for the audience, a lower and an upper, held a few thousand spectators.
Admission is free. Some of the bookmakers own skyboxes. If you bet heavy with them, you can sit up here.
Valentine saw motion in the upper deck to his right, not sure of what he was seeing for a moment. Yes, that definitely was a woman's head of hair bobbing in an audience member's lap.
I've heard of seat service, but
That's taking it to a new level.
Some of the cheaper gals work the BJ deck. They're supposed to be selling beer and peanuts and stuff, too. But a lot just carry around a single packet or can. Lazy bitches.
Outrageous.
Valentine looked up at the gridwork above and froze. The lighting gantries had reapers in them. Valentine counted three. One sat in a defunct scoreboard, occasionally peering from a hole like an owl. Another hung upside down from a lighting walkway, deep in shadow, neck gruesomely twisted so it could watch events below. A third perched in a high, dark corner.
They always here.
Oh, yeah. That dark box, there and there. You have a couple more in each one of those. Memphis's own version of closed-circuit TV. They never bother anyone. Sometimes a contestant gets badly hurt. The injuries end up being fatal.
Then why do they fight?
Look at Rod Lightning's finger back there. Nice little brass ring and a riverside house. He trains cage fighters now. Sight of beetles bother you?
Not unless they're looking at me.
Moyo arrived with a small entourage of river and rail men. Valentine took an inconspicuous seat and watched events below. Something called a bum fight began, involving a half dozen shambling, shabby-looking men clocking each other with 2x4s.
From the halls of Montezuma.
It ended with two still upright, and the blood in the hexagon being scrubbed by washerwomen, while a blonde singer warbled from the stage near Moyo's box. He only had one brief conversation with Moyo.
How do you like the Midway?
Better organized and a lot less dangerous than New Orleans. There's nothing on the Gulf Coast like this.
You checked out the inventory yet?
I've got a couple more days in town still.
Rooster can set the whole thing up. I'm gonna be on my boat this weekend.
I think he's got a handle on what I need.
There was topless roller derby on the wooden ring, a crowd favorite judging from the cheers. The metronome motion of swinging breasts as the women power skated had a certain fascination, Valentine had to admit. Then an exhibition of flame dancing. The first grogs Valentine had seen on the Midway spun great platters full of flaming kerosene on their outstretched arms and heads. They arranged it so the liquid fire sprinkled off the spinning dishes and they danced beneath the orange rain.
Enthralling.
God, I hate those things. Stupid, smelly, ill-tempered. They're useless.
Attendants with fire extinguishers cleaned up after the dance as the grogs cartwheeled off stage. Then it was time for the main event. A cage descended on wires from the ceiling, ringing the hexagon with 6 wire barriers. Valentine watched Pulp Fontaine turn the draw's shoulder into a bloody ruin. So much for long shots, Valentine thought, as Fontaine accepted a victory crown from this month's Miss Midway.
10,000 will get you her for the weekend, Stewie. Want me to set it up?
I don't roll that high.
The party in the box got louder, and the stadium began to empty out. It was just after 11. Rod Lightning left with the 2 bar girls. The announcer began to count down for kill tally bets. Valentine wondered what that meant.
Time to call it a night. Thank you for your hospitality.
Nope. One more special show. Ever heard of a rat kill?
This have something to do with extermination?
In a manner.
Valentine watched 20 men of assorted sizes and colors being led into the center hexagon. Each had a black hood over his head. Some of the people on their way out hurried for the exits, but a good third of the audience stayed.
What's this?
It's a rat kill. I'm gonna watch this one. One of my yard chiefs is in there, Daniel Penn. He was screwing me on deposits, swapping out corpses for the healthy, and smuggling them across the river.
Rooster made a note on a pad.
They're all criminals of one sort or another, or vagrants.
Some of the condemned men lost control of themselves as they stepped into the ring. Bladder, bowel, or legs gave way. Escorts in black uniforms shoved them into the cage and lined them up. Valentine saw a shot clock light up in the scoreboard, evidently one part of it still worked, set for 60.
And here comes the Midway Marvel.
Tall, pale, hair like a threadbare black mop. It was a reaper, stripped to the waist, loose, billowing black pants ending just above its bare feet. It walked oddly, though, with its arms behind it. As it entered the cage, Valentine saw why. Thick metal shackles held its wrists together.
The Marvel's got 60 seconds to off as many as he can. Record's 15 for the year. All-time high's 18. Contest rules say that one always has to survive, even though we've never had a 19.
As they unshackled each man from his companions and removed his hood, they read the crime, but no name. Number one was a murderer. Number two committed sabotage. Number three had been caught with a transmitter and a rifle.
Why no women?
Oh, I haven't done women in a rat kill for years.
14, a currency forger, fainted when they took his hood off.
Crowd didn't like it as well. They booed when it killed a woman instead of a man. We have other ways of taking care of women. Would you like...
No thanks.
A heavy-set man in a black-and-white striped shirt with a silver whistle entered the ring. He wore a biking helmet and thick studded leather gloves. The condemned men bunched up.
Who operates the Marvel?
Oh, the one at the top of the pyramid. We only get to do one of these a month. You're lucky.
You must have an unusually lawless town.
Well, I'll tell you a little secret. Only a couple are really criminals. The others are volunteers who took the place of a spouse or a relative in the fodder wagon. On a bad night, only six or seven die, so they got a better than 50-50 chance of making it back out.
Jesus.
Oh, he never showed up.
The referee held a black handkerchief high. Valentine was surprised to see that the Reaper's arms were still bound. Weren't they going to unleash it? Or would it simply break free at the right moment?
60 seconds, Valentine. You can get through this.
The referee let fall the handkerchief and backpedaled from between the Reaper and the trembling rats. The Reaper sprang forward, a black and cream blur. It landed with both feet on the neck of the man who had fainted. Valentine almost felt the bone snap.
One!
A convict grabbed another, slighter man by the arm and pushed him at the Reaper. Snake-hinged jaws extended and the stabbing tongue entered an eye socket.
Two!
The Marvel had a sense of humor. It headbutted the man who had thrown his companion into its jaws. Blood and grayish brain matter splattered across the damp canvas.
Three!
The shot clock read 46 seconds. Another jump, and another man went down. The Reaper had some trouble straddling him before the tongue lanced out and buried itself in his heart.
Four!
Some of the men climbed the panels of the cage, not to get out, as it closed at the top, but to make themselves inaccessible. The Reaper sprang up, jaws closing on a neck.
Five!
The shot clock read 39 seconds. The Reaper threw the body off the way a terrier tosses a rat. The next victim tried to hide behind the referee and got a leather glove backhand for his troubles.
Six!
The next one was kicked off the fencing by another man higher up.
Seven!
15 seconds left. The Reaper hurled itself at the cage, and three men dropped off the fencing like windfall apples.
Eight!
Nine!
Ten!
The Reaper lashed out with a clawed foot and opened a man up across the kidneys.
10 is the official count. 10 paid 3-1. Check your stubs. 10 paid 3-1.
About average. Sorry you didn't get a better show, Stu.
The dripping Reaper folded itself on the mat. 11 died anyway, screaming on the blood-soaked canvas. Moyo looked exhausted.
Well, that's it for me, kiddies. Good night.
How about a nightcap?
Night's still young, and so are we, oh scarred Stew.
Rooster refilled his glass.
I got a bottle of JB in my boat.
No, better liquor at my place. You haven't really partied Memphis style yet.
Or we could hit some bars.
I've got something better than that.
Better than the Midway?
Better. I need to stop off at the security station first and check out some inventory. Meet me at the big stone statue out front, say, in 15 minutes.
Well, how about I come with you?
No. No, you don't have the right ID for the security section. I'll be fast.
See you there.
Valentine rode the elevator down. A more alert-looking guard worked the buttons after hours and collected his pocket knife. He had to shrug off prostitutes, three women and a man, all with makeup, headed south for the evening, on the way to the statue. The night had cooled, but only a little. The concrete seemed to be soaked with heat like the bloody canvas within.
Please, Ellie, be coherent when I get back.
He caught sight of Rooster, leading a little procession of three individuals in oversized blue Pyramid Power t-shirts. All female, all teens, shackled in a manner similar to the 20 culls within.
Got you a little souvenir stew.
Rooster tossed him a black hood with the number 10 on it. Valentine smelled the sweat on it.
I had them tag it with the date. The one with the number the Marvel took is collectible.
Valentine wadded up the thin, slick polyester in his hand and looked at the string of young women. Rooster held a leather lead attached to the first. A foot and a half of plastic line linked each set of ankles.
Who are these?
You want to get zapped? No? Then shut it!
Rooster lifted a baton with a pair of metal probes at the end.
I just need to get a bag from my boat.
Okie dokie.
They walked slowly down the line of houseboats. Lights burned within some.
What's the plan for these three?
Inventory inspection. Fresh stuff just off the train that I picked out this week. Privileges of position and all that. They go back in the inventory hopper Monday morning, provided I don't get a lot of lit. Then it's back with the deposits.
Three?
I don't mind sharing. I like to do one while the others watch.
Valentine looked at the trio. The youngest looked 14. He read silent pleas in their eyes.
I think I'm gonna bring my camera for this.
Great idea!
Valentine approached his boat. Their Dallas neighbor was apparently out for the evening.
Red!
Duvalier popped out from the cabin like a jack-in-the-box. She had blood caked in her hair, under one eye, on her hand.
The hell?
No time. Valentine brought his hand down hard on Rooster's wrist. He grabbed the butt of the club with the other hand, found the trigger, and released his grip on the wrist as he stuck the metal-tipped end against Rooster's breastbone. The smell of ozone filled the riverbank air. Rooster dropped, twitching, and Valentine turned on Duvalier, expecting her to lunge, not knowing what he'd do to her.
Back off, Allie.
Val, are you nuts? What's going on?
We're getting out of here.
I was just gonna suggest that.
You want out of Memphis, girls?
Ooh.
Valentine zapped Rooster again.
Yes.
The others nodded dumbly.
Get in the boat.
Valentine opened up the pocket knife and cut the bands between their legs, stuffed the hood in Rooster's mouth, and tied it down with the leather lead. He searched him, found a key to the girl's shackles, and transferred the restraints from the chicks to the cock. Valentine looked over to Valier as they cut the lines from the little cabin cruiser to the wharf. Valentine made sure to leave a long lead at the front of the boat. Duvalier pushed the girls into the cabin.
Who's the blood from?
Our Dallas neighbor. He insisted he knew me. I think he just wanted in my pants.
Where is he?
Dead.
What?
Don't worry, I did him in the shower. Gave a blowjob he never had time to forget. All the blood flowed into the boat drain.
Except for what's got on you.
What's the plan now?
Thank God the river flows in the direction of Tunica.
Valentine hopped into the water and pushed the boat away from the wharf. The water was only 4 feet deep along the bank.
Try to find us something to use as a paddle.
Someone from another boat watched as they headed toward the river.
What do you think you're doing, buddy?
Fishing! Have a great weekend!
The boat began to drift, and Valentine went around to the front and took up the line. He waded along the river, Mississippi mud, the real kind, treacherous beneath his feet. More than once his feet slipped on the bottom. All Duvalier could find to use as paddles were dinner plates. So he waded on, keeping close to the Memphis bank, until he passed Mud Island and got into the current. He fell into the boat as it slowly spun down past the semi-intact bridge to the Arkansas side. A few other pleasure craft were out, everything from ship-rigged sailcraft to linked lines of inner tubes escaping the summer heat of the city, but keeping well clear of the mid-channel markers that evidently served as some kind of boundary. Valentine parked the teenagers around the stern. Their names were Dara, Miyichi, and Sula of Kansas, Illinois, and Tennessee, respectively, and had them all hold plastic cups as though they were drinking. Valentine and Duvalier paddled with the dinner plates, weary work that required hanging off the side whenever the current threatened to carry them too close to a passing boat or the bank. After a while, they paused to catch their breath.
Fever's down, I take it.
Broke this afternoon. God, I'm tired.
Fewer and fewer craft were to be seen the farther south along the shore they drifted. They came to the second bridge. Only the piers nearest the shore were still connected with the road. Valentine saw sentries on the empty bridge. It might seem odd to guard a bridge to nothing but a 100-foot drop, but the vantage gave a superb view of the river south of Memphis.
Allie, you get in the cabin with your shotgun. You three, pretend to be passed out.
After they passed under the bridge, a spotlight hit them.
You're coming up on the buoys! Commercial and security craft only!
My engine fell off! I need a tow!
Not our problem!
What unit y'all in?
Bravo Company! Corson's Memphis Guard! You're about an eighth of a mile from being arrested!
Well, then, throw us a line!
Sula raised her shirt. She hopped up and down in the spotlight.
Bravo Company, Memphis Guard!
Distractions.
Sula then sat down and hugged her knees, and they drifted until the spotlight went off.
Nice improv, except it's likely to bring six patrol craft down on us.
Valentine knew vaguely that at the bend ahead, a largish island divided the river. If they could reach it, they'd be near the wall to the Ravy colony. A patrol craft, even smaller than their boat, plodded up the river on a single outboard.
Are we in trouble?
Row toward the bank. Paddle!
Valentine leaned over and dug into the water with a dinner plate. Someone on the bridge with a good pair of night glasses would still be able to distinguish individual figures. The boat turned sharply their way. A small spotlight or a heavy-duty flashlight lanced out through the river night.
Keep down, you three.
Allie, small boat. One sticks his head in the cabin, you blow it off.
Valentine stood up and waved with both arms.
Hey there! Can you give us a tow?
Just funning with the soldiers. Didn't mean any harm.
Yeah, I'm sorry about her not keeping the flotation devices properly stowed, sir.
Hey, Corp, let's turn him in as vagrants and take the bounty.
You let me do the thinking. Put the man on board and handcuff him. If he's somebody, we apologize and bring him home to Mama. Otherwise, we'll take a little snatch break with the girls before we collect the bounty.
Valentine opened his pocket knife to the longest blade and climbed up on the front of the boat, where Sula had done her exhibition, and knelt. He made a move to tuck in his shirt and stuck the open knife in his back pocket.
Toss me a line there, sir. I really appreciate this.
The police boat came alongside. It had a small trolling motor and a big inboard. A waterproof-wrapped machine gun was lashed to a platform on the retractable top. Unlike Valentine's craft, the front was open, with more seating. A lean man with corporal stripes and a blue and white shirt tossed Valentine a rope. His partner wore a black baseball cap with a Memphis Guard patch sewn to the front. Valentine leaned forward to catch it and went face first into the river.
Grab onto this, you idiot!
As he surfaced, Valentine grabbed onto the rope loop boat hook the corporal had extended.
You're really racking up the fines, friend.
The corporal pulled Valentine into the boat. Valentine saw the other coming forward with the handcuffs and put his foot down, hard, on the corporal's instep. The knife flashed up and into the side of the man's throat. Valentine twisted his wrist as he pulled it out, opening the carotid artery.
That's shit!
The other dropped his cuffs and reached for his holster as his partner instinctively clapped a hand to the spurting blood. Valentine's fist struck the hat wearer's face squarely between the eyes. Valentine threw himself after his fist and bodily knocked the man against the boat's side. The knife ripped into the guard's crotch, digging for the femoral artery just to the side of the groin, then up and across the eyes. Valentine saw an explosion of light. He backed off, shaking his head, trying to think, to see. When his vision came back, the man was on the deck, the blackjack he'd struck Valentine's temple with still in his hand. Duvalier was astride the railing, bloody sword cane in hand.
Allie.
Not a bad killing, but we have to go. Right now.
They transferred the people, including the bound rooster, over to the police boat. Duvalier tossed over their dunnage bags as Valentine put on the river patrolman's baseball cap. They tied their now empty boat to the transom on a 10-foot line. Valentine went to the control console and pushed the throttle forward. He didn't open it all the way. Too fast an exit might alarm the bridge watchers, but they were still heading away from Memphis. Valentine turned on the flashing police light. Perhaps the bridge sentries would think that the river patrol had spotted another craft and moved to intercept. They passed out of sight of the bridge behind the island, roaring down the river with a V of white water behind. They rounded the island and rejoined the main channel of the river as it zigzagged south again.
Allie, rig one of the cans with a timer. We're into the rabies colony area now. We'll send this thing to the Arkansas shore and have it blow.
Hope all this was worth it, Val. I don't think we're gonna get another try at the pyramid after this.
Valentine looked at the three girls in the bow of the police boat.
It was worth it.
Twenty-four hours later, they stood in a dark lower deck of one of the old casino barges. A single lantern threw just enough light off the remaining bits of mirror and glass to reveal just how big, dark, and empty the former gambling hall was. Rows of broken open, dusty slot machines stood like soldiers on parade. It reeked of bat guano and mold. Valentine, Anka, Duvalier, and Everready surveyed their handiwork. Rooster was tied face down on an old roulette wheel, his hands solidly bound to the well-anchored spinner. The rather haggard-looking deposit and inventory man couldn't see anything. His head was enclosed in a bag with the number 10 written on it. A small bowl of foul liquid, blood and musk glands from a sick old tomcat Valentine had shot with his 22 an hour ago, rested on the wooden bar for the player's drinks.
Money, then? Moyo's loaded. He'll pay to get me back.
Dara, Miichi, and Sula sat on the stools next to the wheel so they could see Rooster's face. Valentine took the hood off.
Okay, Jacksonville. I give up. You win. What do you want? What did I ever do to you?
No, this is purely professional. I need to know about a certain train.
I deal with dozens of trains a week, man. How am I supposed to fix?
No, this is right up your alley. It's a really special train.
Look, I have a dog. No one to look in on him. He's dying.
Listen to the question. A train. A special train. Not deposits. All women on board, routed through Memphis. Some sort of medical test selected them. Maybe joining with similar trains?
I don't know anything about a train like that. Let me go, and I'll find out for you.
Looks like you girls are gonna get to watch after all. Bring it in, Smokey.
Anka stepped forward from the opposite end of the table. Rooster tried to look behind himself, but couldn't get his chin around his shoulder.
What's that?
Valentine walked to the end of the table and used the saw edge on the pocket knife to split Rooster's pants at the buttock line.
A big bull grog, Rooster.
Valentine winked at Anka.
I don't like this. I think we set a train like that north somewhere.
Valentine dipped his hand in the smelly cat offal.
You better dig deep in your memory, before our bully boy gets deep into you, Rooster.
Valentine smeared the bloody slime up Rooster's crack.
You can't mean... Oh, no!
Anka began to paw at Rooster, his giant, long-fingered hands taking a grip on his shoulder.
He thinks you're a female in estrus, Rooster.
Holy shit, that's big! Pip, my forearm's got nothing on this grog.
Stop him! Stop him!
Where? You're about a minute away from a lifetime with a colostomy bag if you don't bleed to death. Where?
Something brushed up between Rooster's spread cheeks.
Lawton, Ohio! Lawton! Lawton.
Pull him back.
Anka came off Rooster's back. Valentine threw down the hood and opened an old rolled-up state atlas.
Show me on this map.
He did. Duvalier lifted the eggplant she'd been working between Rooster's buttocks.
There. You've helped yourself out of a jam, Rooster. Sorry about your dog, but we'll have to keep you here for a few months. Once we've checked your destination out, we'll let you go free.
Rooster sagged in his bonds.
What do they do with the women there?
I don't know. It's just very important they arrive healthy. A doctor accompanies each train.
How many trains?
One or two a year. Maybe 100 total bodies.
Duvalier and Anka exchanged shrugs. Valentine picked up the bowl of cat guts and sent it spinning into the darkness.
Girls, watch Rooster for a moment. Don't take advantage of a pantsless man.
They went to a stairwell where a candle burned.
Ever ready. You think you can take care of those girls and keep an eye on that prisoner for the summer?
Be a nice switch from fresh wolves with milk still on their chins.
If we're not back by New Year's, I'll leave it to your discretion.
Everett's home for wayward girls. I kind of like the sound of that. Maybe this old cat should retire and take up a new line of work.
In your dreams, Gramps.
Looks like I'm Ohio-bound. You two want to go back?
Never. Will Post is counting on us.
It does occur to you that you're looking for a needle in a haystack. Maybe a haystack that's been blown across half the country.
You're going back then?
Maybe the ravies is finally kicking in. I'm game. But next time, Val, you're squatting under Anka's junk and holding the vegetable, okay?
As they talked roots on the top deck of the defunct casino, Everready warned Valentine that his knowledge of the area had ended at the dipping loops of the Tennessee. From there, they'd need another guide to get them to Ohio, and he only trusted one.
Trains are no good. They're checkpoints at all the major rivers. You'll have to go overland. Only man who knows the ground I know of is Hoffman Price. This time of year, you'll find him at the Goat Shack on the Tennessee. He can't bear to hunt in August.
What's he hunt?
People. Real criminals, not carrying fugitives and whatnot. Though I'm not sure that's for morals. It's more that they don't bring enough warrant money.
What about gorillas?
He sticks his nose into no war, or feud, I should say. He calls the whole cause a big feud. He's brought in a freeholder or two, like Tubulus O'Neill. He and his posse were going around hanging Quisling mayors and whatnot along with their families.
What are we supposed to bribe him with?
Give him this.
Everready took off one of his Reaper Tooth necklaces and searched the string. After a few minutes of fiddling, he extracted two teeth and passed them to Valentine. One had the letter H carved into the root, and the other the letter P.
Tell him Everready's calling him on his debts.
The Tennessee Valley, August. The heat reminded Valentine of Haiti, which is about as much as could be said of any hot day, then and for the rest of his life. Even in the shade, he sweated, the humidity about him like a sticky cocoon, turning his armpits and crotch into a swamp as moist as either of the bottoms flanking the peninsula of land projecting like a claw into the lower Tennessee. Everready's map had been accurate, right down to the friendly homes along the way where they could trade news and a few bullets for food, a hayloft, hammock, and wash soap. Then they finally reached the point where they would need Hoffman Price's expertise. Valentine watched the Goat Shack through his Memphis River Patrol binoculars. Except for the horsetails swishing under a barn's awning and ATVs parked around the outbuildings, he'd suspect the place was deserted. The Goat Shack certainly looked dilapidated, even abandoned. Glassless windows, the front door laid out across the wide porch, a few holes in the roof. The road-facing side had fresh cypress boards nailed on horizontally to cover a pickup truck-sized hole. A dock, divided into an aluminum half by the shore and a wooden extension out onto the lake, ended in a boathouse. Pilings for other docks, perhaps swept away in some flood, dotted the whole riverside behind the house. Goats rested in the shade of the porch. Valentine watched a tired-looking Billy plunge his head into a water trough fed by a downspout and drink. Valentine suspected it had once been a bar and restaurant for pleasure craft on the river. A few feet behind, Duvalier lay flat on her back, her feet up on her pack. Anka sat cross-legged with his back to the chestnut tree shading Valentine. The smell of goats reminded Valentine of his first day as a wolf.
Just doesn't feel right. It's like the place is waiting for us.
We could try going north on our own. I don't think this country is muchly inhabited.
No, we need a guide. Screw it. Anka, cover us from out here with your gun, would you?
While Valentine changed into the cleaner, cut-down black clothes he'd worn in Memphis, Anka unstrapped the leather belts around the blanket rolls containing his gun. Duvalier picked up her pack and slung her pump-action shotgun, then handed Valentine his U-gun. They wandered off the small hummock the chestnut shaded and walked the broken-up road, more potholes than grade.
What if this Hoffman Price isn't here?
We find someone else.
Reaper teeth won't do us much good.
I have some gold left.
Just enough to be robbed of and left for dead.
As if you'd let that happen.
The nanny goats, lying on the porch, watched them walk past a pair of motorcycles and up onto the porch. A mutt watched them from the shade beneath a truck up on blocks. The brilliant sunshine made every crack in the repaired section of wall a black stripe. There were bullet holes in the doorframe and around the windows. Duvalier wrung out her handkerchief in the water trough and wiped the sweat from her deeply freckled face and neck.
Ready when you are, Val.
Hello, the house. May we come in?
You a warrant man?
No.
Then you're not welcome here. Be off.
We're looking for a warrant man, actually.
Who?
Hoffman Price.
Then come in, friend.
It smelled like vomit in the big, welcoming room. It took Valentine's eyes a second to adjust. He instinctively stepped out of the door, and Duvalier followed him in. A mountain of a woman, gray-haired and with a washed-out red halter top, sat on a stool at one end of a chipped bar with an electric fan blowing on the back of her neck, talking to a bearded man wearing what looked like a bathrobe. Valentine looked around what was evidently a bar. Sandbags were piled around the door and windows and circled the entire bar, at least to waist height. The floor was thick with grit, the ceiling with spiderwebs. The furnishings appeared to have been pulled out of boats and cars. Two men in leather and denim and linked chain sat at a far table, biker boots stretched out in opposite directions toward each other like the tails of a yin and yang symbol. Duvalier examined the wallpaper, to which was glued an assortment of wanted posters, from cheaply printed 10x20s to full-color photos to what looked like fax paper.
Good afternoon, Black and Red. I'm Greta. What can I get you?
What does the house recommend?
I like him, George. Polite goes a long way with me. I do a real mint julep.
You're kidding.
I shit you not, Black.
Two then.
Being strangers, please put the guns on top of the sandbags there. Take a seat.
They disarmed themselves, but sat next to their weapons. Greta got up from her stool, revealing a .45 automatic lying on the bar. She tucked it into a leather back waistband holster and waddled off to a door at the back, next to the far end of the bar. The man in the bathrobe turned to Valentine and Duvalier.
You two got someone you're looking to bring in?
You're not Price, are you?
He ain't allowed in here.
Then I'd rather not discuss it.
Just asking, Black. I wouldn't jump your claim. I'm retired, like.
The man shifted in his seat and revealed a conspicuous lack of underwear.
Peek-a-boo! Oof!
Greta returned with two tall, thin glasses, the outsides slick with moisture. Valentine looked at the drinks as she set them down. Duvalier put both hands around the glass.
Ice!
Only ice machine for 50 miles.
We don't come here for the decor, Red.
Close-up shop, George. It wasn't a prize winner in your best days, and nobody's gonna pin a blue ribbon on it now.
Valentine sipped at the sweet drink. The alcohol dropped and hit like a sledgehammer driving rail spikes.
Whew. My bourbon does have a bit of a bite. How about some food?
We'd like to see Hoffman Price.
He is up early fishing. He'll be asleep now.
What kind of payment do you accept? I have some Memphis scrip.
Strictly barter, Black. I'll take 3 shells for that 12-gauge or 5 rounds for your pistol. That'll include lunch and those drinks.
Valentine counted out pistol ammunition. 15 minutes later, she brought them fried slabs of catfish and hush puppies, wrapped up in old wanted posters. They read the greasy bills as they ate. Wanted on suspicion seemed to be the most frequent crime, followed by theft and fraud. When they were finished, she added another oily wrap to their table.
Now that you're done, you can take Coffee his dinner. Saves me the bother.
I thought he was sleeping.
I saw his tracking grog up and around. Means he's up. The boathouse is at the end of the dock. Just follow the ferry line. You can leave your weapons. No one's gonna touch them. Shack rule.
Valentine picked up the still warm bag and found the back door. What had been an extensive cypress patio now looked like a piece of modern art made of bird droppings. An assortment of canoes and motorized rowboats lined the bank of the inlet protected by the finger of land. Duvalier looked at the shacks at the end of the deck.
And outhouses hanging over the river? Nice.
Could be worse. Could be upstream.
They walked down the dock. A raft ferry built out of an old 25-foot pontoon craft was attached to lines stretching to a piling in the center of the river. Another set of lines linked it to the other side. Valentine saw a turned-over rowboat there. Some kind of sign stood over the rowboat, but it was too far away to read, even with the binoculars. Two great wet hands rose out of the river near the boat shack. A grog, the simple gray variety, distantly related to Ankh, climbed out. It was a female. She wrapped something against the dock and then stuck it in her mouth. As she chewed, she watched them approach.
Hello?
The grog hurriedly whipped a second crayfish against the dock, then dropped it in her mouth. She chewed and looked at them. She let them pass to the door, which sat crookedly on its hinges.
Mr. Price?
Yeah?
My name's David. Greta gave me your lunch. Can I have a word?
Door's not locked, son.
Valentine opened the door to the little shack, got a good view of river through the open door, saw a tied-up canoe, and was hit by a wave of odor that almost brought him to his knees. It was B.O., but of an intensity he'd never experienced before. He saw a man standing at a workbench, a disassembled Kalashnikov spread out on an oil-smeared towel. Duvalier stepped in behind.
Oh, jeez!
She backed out. Her stomach had never been the strongest. The filthiest man Valentine had ever seen stepped away from the bench. Hairy shoulders, black with dirt, protruded from mud-stained overalls that seemed clean by comparison. Two bright eyes stared out of a crud-dark face. Dumbstruck by the man's hygiene pathology, Valentine could only stand and attempt to forget he had a nose.
I always enjoy the reaction.
Price smiled. His teeth were a little yellow, but clean and fairly even. Valentine tried breathing through his mouth.
Greta used to call me breathtaking.
Valentine counted blood-gorged ticks dangling from the region about Price's armpits and ears and stopped after six.
Everetti sent me from the Yazoo.
How is that old back shooter?
Same as always.
Haven't seen him in, it's 3 years now. You looking for someone?
No thanks. I like him cooked.
Just a guide.
Uh-huh. To where?
Just across the Ohio River. Place called Laurelton. I'll show you on a map.
That's quite a trip, son.
That's why I need a guide. Myself and two companions.
That little gal out there up for mileage like that?
I've been to the Rockies and back with her.
I'm on my summer holiday. Hope you've got a wheelbarrow full of incentive.
Valentine dug out the Reaper teeth. He held out his hand with the teeth in his palm.
Everetti said he was calling in your debts.
Ah, I'll be damned.
Price took them.
Pretty.
Nice young gal you got. Some of the titty trash that gets brought into the shack, they scream at her. But I have to say no, son. Too far. Too long since I've been over the ordnance ground.
Ordnance?
Big stretch of ground between the Ohio River and the Great Lakes. They make the Kentucky Currians look like amateurs. Decent bounties, but I like to spend autumn and winter down here.
But those teeth.
I'd do anything for old Everetti. But you aren't him. That particular debt isn't transferable.
Money, then. I have some gold.
Hard to spend when you're getting gnawed on by a legworm. I'll put on the old thinking cap, son, and try to come up with someone crazy enough for a round cross Kentucky. But no names come to mind.
The grog came back in, leading Duvalier by the hand. She deftly opened a tackle box and showed her collections of costume jewelry, interestingly shaped pieces of driftwood, and some old United States coins.
I see B's making herself agreeable. Nice to see someone being kind to her.
He doesn't want to do it, Red.
What about the teeth?
That deals with Everetti. You got nothing to do with it.
That makes you a Welsher, as well as a skunk.
Allie.
You got no paper on me, and nothing I want. The door's just behind unless you want to swim out of here.
When's the last time you had a woman, Price?
What's that talk for?
I'm talking about a bonus. You can have me for the duration of the trip. Interested?
Get out of here, both of you. I've had my fill.
We'll be up in the shack if you change your mind. Till tomorrow morning. I'm a limited time offer.
Come on, Black. Let's get out of here.
Valentine and Duvalier walked back up the noisy planks.
What was that all about?
Don't tell me you're jealous. Oh, shit, I think some of that smell got in your hair.
And you were talking about sex with him.
Val, I let that pig Ham drip all over me in bed. This guy's just dirty on the outside. That grog's sweet. There's no way he can be that bad or she wouldn't be that way. He'll come round. He just needs to think about it.
Just when I think I know you.
Ah, but you didn't hear my conditions. I would have insisted that he take a bath first. I'm not interested in hosting a flea circus in my crotch all the way to Ohio. I only just got rid of the Memphis brood.
They negotiated a room with Greta.
It'll be cool enough to sleep about 3 in the morning.
And then went out to bring in Anka, which turned out to be a mistake.
We'll feed and water him, but he can't stay inside. Grogs are strictly outdoor animals.
Sorry, Anka. They're big on rules here.
Your poet, Kundera, said, "Only animals were not expelled from paradise, my David. I am not an animal, save in the same biological sense as that woman."
And this isn't paradise, old horse. I'll sit outside with you.
Duvalier joined them on the porch with the goats, drinking ice water from a pitcher that had to be refilled every half hour. Valentine watched the goat shack's dubious clientele trickle in as the sun set. Greta disappeared, replaced at the bar by a gap-toothed relative who shared her peppery hair color. Duvalier produced a deck of cards scavenged from the casino where they'd interrogated Rooster with an eggplant. The idle evening on the porch passed pleasantly enough. Muscles sore from weary days on the road stiffened. Perhaps a dozen patrons now passed time and swatted flies in the bar. Precious little commerce seemed to be going on. Most of the groups of tables were swapping drinks for tobacco or old newspapers for a pocketful of nuts. Many of the men smoked. Peanuts and jokes cracked back and forth across the tables. Valentine watched a man in deerskin boots swap a pipe for an unfinished bottle. A sheathed knife dangled from a leather thong around his neck, and his belt held no fewer than 3 pistols. Considering the clientele and the quantity of weaponry, the goat shack was surprisingly peaceful. Or perhaps it was due to the clientele and the quantity of weaponry. Valentine felt guilty lazing on the porch. He should be doing something. Arguing about the nature of promises with Hoffman Price, wandering through the barroom asking for stories about Kentucky. Instead, he was looking for another heart so he could lay down a flush and take the pot of 16 wooden matches. 2 men wandered up from the riverbank, one bearing a dead turkey on a string. They wore timber camouflage, a pattern that reminded Valentine of the tall, dark, vertical corpses of buildings that he'd seen in the center of Chicago. The one with the turkey turned inside. The other, a pair of wraparound sunglasses hiding his eyes, watched their game. Or perhaps them.
What manner of grog is that?
We call ourselves the Golden Ones.
The who?
Golden Ones.
Golden Ones?
Yes.
Didn't know there was them who spoke that good of English of your sort.
Likewise.
The man stared frankly at Duvalier. She ignored him. The bird hunter followed his friend in. Duvalier put down 2 pair and took the pile of matches.
Ah, the mosquitoes are getting bad.
Yeah, I'll see about dinner and DEET.
Greta's generator ran 2 lighting fixtures, both wall-mounted, both near the bar. One was the lit face of a clock. Someone had broken off the plastic arms, and whether the remaining stubs still told the time, Valentine couldn't say. And the other, a green neon squiggle of a bass leaping out of the water, a bright blue line projecting from its mouth. Perhaps a dozen customers sat in the gloom, save for the 2 huntsmen, who were looking at a wanted poster under the clock light. A 3rd man joined the other 2 by the clock, getting a light. He joined in the inspection of the bill. Valentine felt the stares of the company. Because they were outsiders?
You wouldn't have a bottle of bug repellent, would you?
No, sir. You and your girl could come inside. The tobacco keeps them out.
A shaggy woodsman looked on. Valentine didn't like the way he kept his hand near his open-topped holster.
You don't like the skeeters. You could relocate off-river. Tag. Take your pet and go.
Earl. Goat stew and biscuits be up soon, mister.
I'll buy 4 servings.
There's only 3 of you.
Grog's got a big appetite.
We only got goat. No spitted youngsters.
You won't even get goat if you keep that up. Greta hospitalized him herself.
Valentine walked away.
Hey, Tag! Tag!
Valentine went out the door, glad to have a pile of sandbags and a cedar wall between himself and Earl.
I think we'll spend the night on the porch.
See you in country, Tag!
Hey, Earl, come over here and roll one. Calm down.
Everready should have hooked us up with gorillas.
They're up in the mountains east of Nashville for the most part.
Well, that's a place to get across this river. Perhaps there are no Curtis near. Even a Reaper would have trouble with the crowd inside.
The crowd inside chose that moment to spill out the door. The 2 turkey hunters and Earl came out of the bar, pistols drawn. Duvalier made a move for her shotgun. A voice from the repaired section of wall barked at her.
Hold it! I've got 2 barrels of buckshot on you.
Valentine stood up, hands up and away from his weapons. A flashlight clipped to Earl's pistol shined into Valentine's eyes.
Now, hold on. I don't want to...
You got a warrant on you, Tag. You and this lady here.
Mr. and Mrs. David Rowan. He's even got that scar. It's 2-year-old paper out of New Orleans, but a warrant's a warrant.
Other bounty hunters came out of the bar, forming a rough semicircle around the porch. They didn't pull their weapons. Valentine did a quick count. There were 16 men around, if he counted the one covering them from inside.
$15,000 Orleans each, it says. $5,000 for bonus for live delivery. Payable at any coastal marine station. Hey, there's one in Biloxi.
That's real good money.
$40,000 is, if you're in New Orleans. How many of you have been there? Okay, you got us. Let's say you take us to Biloxi and collect your $2,500 each, barring any bribes you might have to pay.
Shut up and face down, Tag. We ain't all collecting this.
Says who? Let him talk, Earl.
Let's say you get us down there without soldiers hoping for a promotion taking us away from you. Biloxi will pay you, all right. In New Orleans dollars. They print that stuff like toilet tissue. It can only be spent in New Orleans, unless you want to trade it into a hard currency exchange at a third of the value. Boat fare, Biloxi to New Orleans, was $400 when I was down there. A bad bottle of Orleans gin was $60. A room's over $300 if you don't mind cockroaches. How far is that $2,500 getting you now?
It's not getting shared 16 ways. Now!
A gunshot from just behind the doorway interrupted him. Greta stood in the door, her shotgun pointed to the sky.
Earl, you owe me 1 shell and these people an apology. Nobody serves papers at my shack. Nobody.
They ain't warrant men.
He's right, Greta.
I knew that when I gave them my hospitality.
Greta lowered the gun and placed it against the back of Earl's ear. The turkey hunters got out of the way of the potential blast.
Earl, holster your piece and say your goodbyes. You're off my peninsula permanently.
Earl put away his gun.
I'll pay up and go, but you 3 can't retire here. Any man wants to call himself a warrant man, you kill the grog. He ain't subject to hospitality. Later, we'll track down these 2 and share the reward. Meet me at the old county sign.
You just do that, Earl. You just do that.
Hoffman Price stepped forward from the darkness, his Kalashnikov in his arms.
Oh, and another grog lover sounds off. You throw down on me, you skunk, and Charlie will blow you in half with his 10-gauge.
B!
Valentine turned to see a warrant man crash headfirst through the repaired section of wall, 10-gauge bent around his neck like a dress tie. B swung out through the hole, treading on the unconscious Charlie, and extracted a pair of sawed-off shotguns from her boot holsters.
Earl, you better shut up before I've got your whole rig for damages.
Didn't you hear, Earl? These folks hired me for a little trip to Chattanooga. They're under my protection. Any man comes to serve papers on them will interfere with my ability to earn my fee. B's my accountant when I'm in country. I refer all financial difficulties to her.
Let's everyone calm down. We're leaving right now. Pretend none of this happened.
Greta lowered her shotgun.
You ordered 4 meals, Black. You and Red and your big friend eat first, then you can leave. You might as well. Earl's picking up the tab.
The warrant men, save for Earl, trickled back inside.